I'm back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of David Whitney of the Institute on the Constitution. We're going to be talking about our wonderful Constitution that has made America different than any other nation, and how we've lost that protection of the Constitution because we have people in Washington, D.C. who have sworn an oath to uphold our Constitution and have done everything they could to destroy it and to destroy our sovereignty and to begin to merge us into this one world government. Well, you know, it's been very interesting this last few days. For the last 3 days, they've suddenly been talking about food shortages. They've been talking about the fact that many of the Costco's on the West Coast and the East Coast and Walmart's, why they're asking people not to buy rice, that there's a shortage of rice here in America. Of course, we've been talking about this for a long time, but there really are food shortages throughout the world. Why are there food shortages? Well, one thing is we are actually using our corn to produce fuel. Of course, it takes more energy to actually produce a gallon of ethanol than it actually produces. It's a very, very poor form of energy. It has to be subsidized by the government. And, of course, what you have to do is you have to burn coal or oil or natural gas to generate the electricity to produce the ethanol. So you actually get more contamination, but that doesn't really matter. It has nothing to do with global warming. It's a scam, and it's taking up at least a third of our corn crop. While people are facing starvation throughout the world, of course, it's driving up the cost of not only corn, but poultry products and certainly of meat products and other things, and animal products, animals that actually consume corn in the process of growing. And then, of course, there's the storms down in Arkansas where, of course, they can't get under the fields to plant the rice. There are droughts over in Australia where, of course, they can't grow rice. And Australia, which traditionally been a large rice producer, you know, can't produce rice and hasn't for some time. And even they're having problems as far as their wheat is concerned because of the drought. And people don't understand that they can have the ability to control the weather. And I'm talking about the elite who really run the world. Now, how do we know they have the ability to do it? Well, you can go back and read the book that was written by Zbigniew Brzezinski back in 1970 called Between Two Ages. We checked the other day. You can buy a copy of the book on Amazon for about $350. For a little paperback book that probably cost $5 to $7 when it was printed back in 1970, but they really don't want you to know what Brzezinski said in that book, you know, about how Marxism was the future of the world and how, of course, in the future we're going to be able to create storms and droughts and new and terrible diseases to afflict the people. And, of course, if you want the pages, we'll be glad to provide them for you. It's a footnote at the bottom of a page. I think it's 59, but it's somewhere between 55 and 65, and they know exactly what they're doing. We have a four-tape set on weather modification. We have a great DVD on weather modification. We have a book on weather modification. Isn't it strange that Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and the other commentators never tell us about the fact that they have the ability to create storms and droughts, and of course I believe they're doing it today, but of course it's all classified. They can't tell you what they're doing, but they really do want to fulfill the prophecies of Revelation 6:8, where of course a great part of the world population will die because of famine. We're dealing with truly organized evil. Right now we have David Whitney with us. David, how are you tonight? All right, we're going to be with David in just a moment as we begin to explore our Constitution and how we're losing our freedom in what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. Well, David, you picked the story up.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. And, You know, what you mentioned earlier is so true, that most of those elected officials, as well as appointed officials in Washington, D.C., care not one whit for the Constitution. They have no desire to see it fulfilled, and, of course, they don't want the American people to know the contents of the Constitution, because when Americans discover what the Constitution actually says and how it actually limits the power of the federal government and how it's being violated in thousands and thousands of ways every day of the week, they're enraged. I'm in the midst of teaching a course on the Constitution right now here in Maryland, and some of the students are getting angry. They're like, I haven't been told this before. I'm, you know, 60, 70 years old, some of the folks, and they're angry because they're realizing they've been lied to, and when they actually look and understand what the founders meant by the words there on the text of the Constitution, they're angered. But that anger is a good thing. It's a good thing because it can motivate us to say, we need to do something. And I know, as Americans, if they discover what the Constitution says, there's first a response of anger and then sometimes a response of despair, saying, it's too late, we can't do anything, they have all the power, they have all the levers, and there's nothing that we, the average citizen, can possibly do. And I want to tell every listener that is false. And as we walk through our course with you here on the radio on the duty of the jury is to defend the Constitution. One juror can make an enormous difference if that juror knows their duty as a juror and they know the United States Constitution, and ultimately if it's a state case, they need to know their state constitution as well. That one juror can stand against the entire tide of evil, that if the legislature has violated the Constitution with a piece of legislation they've passed, if the governor or the president has violated the Constitution by signing, quote, into law, which is not really what happens when they sign a piece of legislation, but that we say they've signed it into law, and then the judiciary signs off on it as well and says, well, yeah, that's legal, that's a legitimate piece of law, there's nothing unconstitutional about it. All of those elected officials and appointed officials can weigh in on a piece of legislation and say it is legal. But one juror, even one juror out of 12, can stop that whole train that if it's violating the Constitution of the United States or of their individual state of the 50 states, that one juror can say, no, that law itself is illegal, that law itself is illegitimate because it violates either the supreme law of the universe, the laws of nature and nature's God, or it violates the Constitution of the United States or the Constitution of their own individual home state. And so what we are doing in this course, the duty of the jury, is to train people in an understanding of that, and what their duty as a juror is.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening, of course, is David Whitney, Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution, and he's talking about the duty of the juror. And actually, if you are on a jury, you have a tremendous amount of power because, of course, contrary to what the judge will tell you, you are not to look into the law, you're not to check the law books, you're simply to do exactly what he tells you to. He will tell you what the law is, and of course, if you don't want to go along with that, you can't be on the jury, and yet he doesn't have the right to do that. He's violating the law doing that because the tradition of America was that the jury determined the constitutionality and the justice of a law, and one person on the jury can simply say, that is wrong, certainly the law is wrong, and we don't have to go along with that. And if this man has been, you know, the judge may want to have him convicted, and of course this is really what it's all about. They don't want, of course, the right of the jury as traditional in American law. They want the judge to be able to determine who goes to prison, who doesn't go to prison, who is convicted and how they're convicted and what they're going to be convicted of. And as I remember talking to Sarah Blaine, who is actually the head of the jury that tried the Davidians, and her remark to me when we talked to her was, the wrong people were on trial. The Davidians were not guilty. We didn't want any of them to go to prison at all. We thought that the judge was going to let them off. And, of course, sent many of them to prison for 40 years. Four crimes were committed by the government who'd gone in there intending to kill the people, and they did kill the people and the children. And they were killed by a special forces unit that was sent in. And we have a DVD, actually, where you'll actually hear people who talk to the members of the special forces called Waco, the New Revelation. You're not hearing about that now, but under any circumstances, what David is bringing out is the fact that if you are on a jury, you certainly become very important, because if you know the Constitution, you can challenge everything that's going on. So pick up the story there, David.
Yes, and the course that we're teaching, and actually we're filming now, and we're going to be putting it together in a host kit that people can purchase and utilize to train other people. The other aim is to be able to teach the information you're gleaning from this course on the jury to your fellow jurors, because it's very likely you'll be the only one of 12 who's ever heard about any of this. Instead, they've heard the propaganda in the media, whether it's movies or talk shows or other things that denigrate the jury, and they will believe the lie. And so you have to have some facts and some history behind you, some quotes of our founders, some ammunition to help you convince the other jurors. I mean, you as one juror can stop the whole thing and come up with a hung jury, but it's far better if you get the jury on your side, persuading them from history, persuading them from law, persuading them in every way possible that they would join you in putting a stop to injustice and unconstitutional legislation.
And how many men are on death row? I think they've had over a couple of hundred of them gotten off of death row who are going to be executed under faulty convictions. The DNA, fortunately, has gotten them off. How could you possibly make mistakes like that? Why, very simply, the judges expedited the trials and really weren't concerned. They wanted to send somebody to prison for the crime, and they convicted the wrong person. And that cannot be allowed, because if that is allowed for one person, predominantly black, it will be allowed for all. We must begin to take America back. And we have the framework for a free society, and part of that, of course, is in the power of the individual juror sitting on a jury. So you pick up the story, David.
Yes. Last time we were speaking about our founders basing our Constitution on a realistic view of human nature, and that realistic view, of course, comes from the Bible, that all men are made in the image of God, their image bearers, and therefore they have dignity as human beings, and they have rights that are endowed to them by their Creator, not from government. Our rights come from the Creator, not from government. The second aspect of human nature that the Scripture speaks about is that all men are fallen creatures, and therefore, as sinful human beings, all of us have a need for government, that the purpose of civil government is to punish the evildoers and to protect the righteous. Scripture says this repeatedly, Romans 13 being just one example of that. And our founders reflected that exact view. For example, read Federalist Paper number 55. This is, 51. James Madison wrote in that paper, "The need for government flows from the fact that all men are fallen creatures with a sinful nature. But what is government itself but the greatest of all reflections on human nature? If men were angels, no government would be necessary. If angels were to govern men, neither external nor internal controls on government would be necessary. In framing a government which is to be administered by men over men instead of angels, by men over men, the great difficulty lies in this. You must first enable the government to control the governed, and in the next place, oblige it, that is the government, to control itself." And that's the beauty, that's the design of the jury. Because the jury in the courtroom is the only independent party present there. The judge is paid by the government. The prosecutor is paid by the government. Oh, the defense attorney, you might say, well, he's not paid by the government. But actually, his career is dependent upon favors and a relationship with the judge, and many factors influence that defense attorney not to be an independent person in the courtroom. And the only independent people there in the courtroom who are not getting paid, not profiting in some way, shape, or form from the outcome of that trial is the 12 members of the jury. And they are designed to be that check upon a civil government if the civil government steps outside of its God-ordained bounds that are given to us in Scripture, the laws of nature, nature's God, or steps out of its constitutional bounds, either the federal constitution or the state constitution. And so the jury, both the grand and the petit jury, both of these function in this role of obliging civil government to control itself. And Dr. Stan, I know you talked many times in many of your shows about how our government is completely out of control, it's completely out of bounds, doing things that violate people's God-given rights and constitutional structure again and again, every which way you turn. And as a citizen in this country, our founders designed the structure such that you would have three votes. Usually when you think of your vote, you only think of one, the vote you cast in an election, the vote you cast at the ballot box. But the other two votes are actually more powerful and far more important. They're your vote as a grand juror or your vote on a petit juror, that's in a trial, jury trial setting. And those are the most powerful votes you actually have. When you elect an official at the ballot box, you're sending somebody to represent you in either the legislature or the executive, or sometimes you have some votes given in the judiciary where you may eject someone who is a bad judge and that sort of thing. But when you serve on a grand jury or a petit jury, you're not sending somebody to represent you. You yourself are getting into the act of governing and preventing injustice from being done. And so the rights and liberties come from God, and they're supposed to be secured by civil government. That's what the Declaration of Independence clearly stated. We are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. That is, you can't take them away, you can't steal them, you may violate them, as King George III obviously was doing, as the Declaration states, but they are inalienable. They can't be given away, they can't be taken away, they can only be violated by other human beings. And that those rights, among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which, by the way, included primarily the ownership of property and the economic freedom to be able to keep the fruit of your labor. That's what the phrase pursuit of happiness meant to our founders. And then it continues that to secure these rights, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. The only purpose of civil government is to secure and protect your God-given rights. And again, in the Constitution, that same idea is right there in the preamble to the Constitution. We, the people of the United States, in order to secure, that is, secure your God-given rights, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity, to ordain and establish this Constitution. And so every citizen is actually essential to enforcing the law as well as holding the civil government to the terms of our contract with it, which is our U.S. Constitution on the federal level and our state constitutions on the local level. Now, today, in most courtrooms, God is out of the picture. Even you know, in our state, and I know other states as well, have actually removed "So help me God" from the oath a person, a witness, needs to take when they take the witness stand. They just said, you know, I swear to tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth. Period. God's removed from that. The Christian system of law and government is far from what happens in most courtrooms. But that was not how our country was founded. Consider, for example, what the Judge Nathaniel Freeman, who, by the way, was a congressman from Massachusetts, 1781 to 93, so during the era of the Constitution. He was a judge of the Common Pleas Court for 30 years there in Massachusetts. And listen to the instructions he gave the jury in 1802. These were his instructions. He said, "The laws of the Christian system as embraced by the Bible must be respected as of high authority in all our courts, and it cannot be thought improper for the officers of such government to acknowledge their obligation to govern by its," that's the Bible's, "by its rule. Our government originated in a voluntary compact of people who in that very instrument, that is in the Constitution, profess the Christian religion. It may be considered not a republic like Rome was, a pagan, but a Christian republic." Wow, what a statement. That God's law, the supreme law of the universe, laws of nature and nature's God, given to us in the Bible, that is to be the governing rule in the courtroom. We have the opposite of that taking place today. I think of the Supreme Court of Colorado just a few years ago threw out a case that was obviously the person was declared guilty of rape and murder, and they threw the entire case out. Why? Because the jury, a couple of jurors in the deliberation phase of that trial, discussed several Bible verses, like an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. They discussed some Bible verses relating to the justness of the death penalty. And the Supreme Court said, you can't bring the Bible into court. The Bible is outlawed. It has nothing to do with law. My friends, that's the exact opposite of what our founders said.
Oh, that thought, David. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. And one reason we're having so much trouble today is people don't know our Constitution, and they don't understand that there are people working within our judicial system who hate the God of the Bible. And, of course, Christianity is under attack in America today. Well, David, go right ahead.
Well, that worldview of our founders, that the Bible is absolutely essential to a just government, means that a juror, in order to function as they were designed to function by our founders, must know God's word. They must know God's law. And this is what Moses was commanded to do back in Exodus 18:20. And you shall teach them, and by them they referred to all the people of Israel, you shall teach them the statutes and the laws and show them the way in which they must walk and the work they must do. And so the sense of the Hebrew Republic was very clear. Everyone was to know the law. Everyone was to be aware of the law, and part of the justice in the society was that everybody knew the law. And contrast that with our day today, where nobody can know the laws. You know, you have a specialist in tax law, and they don't know the entire tax code. Nobody in the IRS even knows the entire tax code. It's impossible to know. Or take the EPA regulations or OSHA or any number of things. It's impossible for any one human being to know all the law. That's an unjust system. The law should be simple enough that every educated adult can entirely know the law and know what is right and wrong. And therefore, I encourage jurors to say, look, when you look at a law, all you need to know to judge that law is God's principles of law and justice given to us in the Bible, and then the U.S. Constitution, and if it's a state case, not a federal case, then your state constitution. That's all you need to know to judge that law. As you said earlier, the judge is going to tell you, oh, no, you can't do that. Leave that up to us professionals. We're the experts in the law. We'll tell you what it means. We'll tell you whether it's just or not. Don't you worry about that. No, 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 no. It's the opposite. We can set aside everything that the government says about it and look at what is the supreme law of the universe, God's law, and secondly, what is the supreme law of the land, the Constitution, federal and state, and by those standards we can then judge the law as to whether the law is just or unjust. You see, what we need to avoid is tyranny. Tyranny is government completely out of control. And our founders were very concerned about tyranny, even what they called mobocracy, which is a tyranny of the majority. I mean, many people think democracy is what our system is. We are not a democracy at all, where 51% of the people going to the ballot box determine what is just and what is unjust, what is law and what's illegal. No, 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 no. That's not what our founders formed. They said a republic is based upon law, God's law, and no man is above the law. 51% of the people cannot change the law. No, the law is fixed. It's God's law. For example, Federalist 10, Federalist Paper 10 says that the church, not God, but the church was to be separate from the state so the ecclesiastical functions and government functions would not interfere with religious and political liberty. So they did not want the church governing over the state, but God's law, God's principles were to govern. Or our federal government itself was designed based upon what God's system of government was given. In Isaiah 33, verse 22, it says, "The Lord is our judge, the Lord is our king, the Lord is our lawgiver." The three branches of government come from God's word, executive, legislative, and judicial. And the whole design of our Constitution and our Bill of Rights on the federal level was to limit federal government, to give it certain limited, enumerated, delegated powers, and no more than that, which is why Article 10 of the Bill of Rights is so vitally important, because anything not explicitly stated in the Constitution as a power that is granted by we the people to our federal government. Anything not explicitly
Hold that thought,
stated.
David. We're going to be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris David is pointing out that the laws, certainly, of our country are based upon the Bible. I mean, what's wrong with killing? Well, of course, everybody knows it's wrong, but it's specifically because the Bible said it was wrong. And certainly, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, and not to perjure yourself or in any extent. There has to be a moral standard. And, of course, those moral standards came from the Bible. Our founding fathers recognized that this was the foundation of society. But you see, those people who hate Christianity, who would destroy the very fabric of our society, have taken the Ten Commandments out of our schools, out of our courtrooms. And in fact, it's so interesting, if you watch Law and Order, the regular one on Wednesday evening, now, of course, in this courtroom, while you'll see behind the judge the big slogan, "In God We Trust." Ladies and gentlemen, supposedly this takes place in New York. You would not dare have a slogan, "In God We Trust," on the wall of any courtroom in New York or any other place in America. It would be forcibly taken down. Why do they have it there in Law and Order? They're trying to create your perception, of course, that, you know, we have just courts. We do not have just courts, unfortunately, because we have changed the law in the past. Most of our lawyers, I would say, and 99% of our judges have never studied the Constitution. In fact, Judge Roy Moore told a friend of mine that he had never read the Constitution as a student in law school. In fact, he said, "I was out of a law school for 5 years before I read the Constitution, understood what it said, and I've been in trouble ever since then." Go right ahead.
Yes, indeed. And as I was mentioning before the break, the Article 10, or the 10th Amendment, basically says, if it wasn't explicitly granted a power to the federal government does not have the power to do it. And there's a whole host of areas where the federal government is involved in things, whether it's OSHA, FEMA. I mean, you just go through the list of federal bureaucracies that are completely illegal. They're unconstitutional. And laws that are completely unconstitutional. Take McCain-Feingold campaign finance reform bill. The president even said he knew it was unconstitutional when he signed it. It was illegal when he signed it, and he knew it was illegal. He should have been impeached for that. But regardless of that, that law, if you were on a federal jury and somebody was charged with violating McCain-Feingold campaign finance reform bill, you should throw it out. The evidence doesn't matter. The person is not guilty because they have not violated a legitimate law. That law violates the First Amendment, therefore the law itself is illegal. Now, our founders knew that anarchy is a dangerous thing. And anarchy is when individuals violate the law of God. The book of Judges describes this very well, that every man did that which was right in his own eyes. We recognize that's a dangerous thing. If, a person said, "Well, I think killing's a good thing, or stealing's a good thing. I, in my own eyes, say that is right." That nobody's life, nobody's liberty, nobody's property is safe if anarchy reigns. And so most people say, "No, anarchy, that's a bad road. We don't want to go down that road." What most people don't recognize, that our founders recognize very clearly, anarchy is just as dangerous as tyranny. In fact, the only difference between anarchy and tyranny is that anarchy is individual lawlessness, individuals breaking God's law, making themselves above God's law. Tyranny is government lawlessness, government setting itself above God's law and making itself a law unto itself. And that's what we have happening on the federal level, in the state level, in our country, in spades right now. And it needs to be stopped, and it's only we, the people, that are going to be able to stop it and put an end to it. And they knew that the danger of government tyranny was real, and therefore they structured our entire form of government to prevent governmental tyranny. The whole idea of federalism is the sharing of powers between the central federal government and the local government as a check against tyranny. They created the separation of powers, not only the three branches of government, the executive, legislative, and judicial, but the four levels of government, that is federal government, state government, and then you come down to the county government, and then the local government, which might be the town or township. These four levels were also to serve as a check against one another. And again, Madison describes this in Federalist Paper number 51. The concept of countervailing ambitions, as well as the constitutional framework of opposite and rival interests, was designed to prevent tyranny. Each branch of government, as well as each level of government, is given power to serve as a check on the other branch or level of civil government.
And, of course, what we're seeing increasingly is the federal government saying to the states, "You do it our way, or we're gonna punish you." In fact, recently this whole idea on the state driver's license becoming an ID card, and Michael Chertoff has said, "Well, if the states don't do it, why we're going to, of course, none of their citizens are going to be able to get on an airplane. They're not going to be able to get into a federal building. We're going to punish you unless you do exactly what we want, because we're in charge here." Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. You go ahead and pick up the story there, David.
Well, they knew that the danger of tyranny was very real, and they knew there were several roads that could lead to tyranny. One that they warned against repeatedly was democracy. And you ought to remember this. Every time you hear the candidates spouting democracy, 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 which they spout all the time, that is the opposite of what our founders wanted. They abhorred democracy because they recognized democracy means a tyranny of 51% of the people who are either voters or in the decision-making process. That 51% of the people, as you know, you could say Nazi Germany, 51% of the people said we can kill these people and put them in the gas ovens. Well, then that becomes a law. If 51% of the people determine the law, not God determine what's just law, you have tyranny again. And so, for example, Noah Webster, one of our illustrious founders, said, in democracy, there are commonly tumults and disorders. Therefore, a pure democracy is generally a very bad government. It is often the most tyrannical government on earth. Think of that. Our founders said that democracy is the most tyrannical government on earth, as they recognize the tyranny of 51% is just as bad as the tyranny of an oligarchy, where you've got a small group of people running everything and deciding what's just and who has any liberties or life or property. Well, when our founders constructed this system of checks and balances between the three branches of government and four levels of government, they put the final check on the whole system in the hands of the jury. And they were building this American jury system really on biblical principles of law and government. If you go back to the Hebrew Republic, which God established with his people at Mount Sinai when he gave the law to Moses and commanded Moses to teach these laws and statutes to the people, this is what God said to the people of Israel, Leviticus 19 and verse 15. You shall do no injustice in judgment. You shall not be partial to the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty. In righteousness you shall judge the poor. So God was saying, you're going to be involved in making judicial decisions in a court, and you are not to do injustice. You are to do justice in judgment by applying my law exactly as I give my law to you. And then Exodus 23, verses 3 and verse 6 say the same thing. You shall not show partiality to the poor man in his dispute. You shall not pervert the judgment of your poor in his dispute. Or Deuteronomy 16, verses 19 and 20. You shall not pervert justice. You shall not show partiality, nor take a bribe. For a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and twists the words of the righteous. You shall follow what is altogether just.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Pastor David Whitney. And before we go on with our discussion, certainly of the Constitution, of the obligation of a juror to judge the law and what actually happened rather than to carry out the dictates of the judge, because the judge will very often send innocent people to prison, as they did with the Branch Davidians. And the jury, as I said earlier, Sarah Blaine, who headed the jury, told me the wrong people were on trial. They recognized the fact that the people who were really responsible for the murder were the BATF agents and the FBI. And, of course, they didn't know about the Special Forces murderers that were sent in to kill the women and the children and shoot all the people in the back of the head. They didn't know about that, but they knew what they'd heard. They were convinced that the wrong people were on trial. It should have been the government agents. But then when were the government agents ever put on trial for mass murder in the United States? Well, before we go on, I want David Whitney to tell us how to get in touch with the Institute of the Constitution, the webpage, what they'll get if they do actually get a packet, and of course, the telephone number. So let's get that information out, David.
Yes, at Institute on the Constitution, we have a website. It's iotconline.com. That's all one word, iotconline.com. And we have many resources available. Like I said, we're in the midst of filming and preparing this course on the jury, and so it's not available yet. It'll probably be this fall. But in preparation to serve as a juror, you need to know the U.S. Constitution. So we encourage you to take our course. Our Foundations course that teaches the Declaration, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights is now actually available online. That is, you can go to our website, sign up online, take the course online, watch the lectures, take the tests online, get grade, and graduate online. and do it that way, as well as we encourage people to get the host kit, which gives you all the DVDs and all the materials, the student notebook, the host notebook, everything you need to conduct a class, to gather some people together in your community, especially gather people together in your church. I was talking with a pastor this week down in Georgia who has 50 people in his class down there, and I think it was Powder Springs, Georgia, very encouraging. He's hoping that more are going to join him as that class progresses. And so he's teaching his people. He's seeing, too, that his people in his church are being trained to be Christian citizens to take back our constitutional republic. Very kind of encouraging things happening that way. So we encourage people to get a host kit. And again, you can do that by going to our website, iotconline.com. Or if you prefer to order by phone rather than doing that over the Internet, you can call us toll-free at Institute on the Constitution, and that number is 866-730-9796. Again, that toll-free number for Institute on the Constitution is 866-730-9796. And by the way, I've been just very encouraged. The past couple of weeks, we've had tens of people every day that are signing up for the online course. And so we've got, I forget the number now, it's up for over 100, but we haven't had the online course available for very long, but it's very encouraging because we see that there's people around the country who either, you know, the time to get to a class or maybe they're night owls, and so they, you know, at 1 o'clock in the morning sit down their computer and take the course. They could take it any time and go through the material and learn what our Constitution actually says. And taking the federal Constitution course is absolutely essential to serve as a juror, because the state constitutions must be in agreement with the federal Constitution. There's nothing that you learn on the federal Constitution course that cannot be applied at a state level. Particularly valuable is the Bill of Rights, knowing what we the citizens, how we have restricted our government and prohibited them from doing certain things. So those are all materials available. Again, there's much more than just the host kit. There's books, there's DVDs. We do a First Friday lecture once a month, and those DVDs are available, and a CD series. There's many different resources available there in our web store, and so we encourage people to avail themselves of that and train themselves to be a Christian citizen prepared to restore the republic by educating a wide circle of people around them, and then taking action in the ballot box and in the jury room of both grand and petit jury.
And I think it's so interesting you point out the importance of the state constitution. We all live in a state, unless, of course, you're from the District of Columbia. But every state constitution, all 50 of them, mention God.
Mm-hmm.
Every state constitution mentions God as the basis for their society. And yet, of course, we're not allowed to mention God in the classroom. We're not allowed to have prayer in the classroom. We're not allowed to have Ten Commandments in the classroom. How could that possibly be? Why, very, very simply, there's a conspiracy against God. When you recognize that, when you recognize that there are people out there who worship a different God, who actually have an intense hatred of Judaism and Christianity, only then can you begin to understand what's really going on in our society. And that's why, of course, I want to put in a little plug for my book, Brotherhood of Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
David, go right ahead and pick up the story.
Yes. Well, I was quoting from Deuteronomy 16, verse 20, just before the break, where it says, "You, that is the people of Israel, you shall follow what is altogether just, that you may live and inherit the land which the Lord your God is giving you." In other words, the issue of justice was not something left to the professionals in the Hebrew Republic. It was the job of the citizens to know God's law and to know what they were to do to apply it in a courtroom such that justice would be done in the courtroom. Everyone was to know the law of God. As I mentioned earlier, that speaking to the people of God in the wilderness, Moses was commanded, "And you shall teach them," the people, "teach them the statutes and the laws, and show them the way in which they must walk and the work they must do," Exodus 18 and verse 20. And R.J. Rushdoony summarized the jury system in America, and I believe he's accurate in what he said. "The jury system was developed in America to a far-reaching power on the premise of a biblical law order in which every citizen knows the law. The requirement that jury members be believers in Massachusetts Bay Colony was not a church requirement, but a state requirement. the law order required men knowledgeable in biblical law. And so the jury system was designed that if you knew God's law and you knew the law of the land, then you were able to function to judge the law as well as to judge the facts in the particular case that is to be brought before you. Well, as we know, and as statesman Edmund Burke well stated in his letter to William Smith, all that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. And that's where we need to raise up the troops here in America who will take a stand and take back our constitutional republic and restore it to what it was designed to be. Because left in the hand of the power elite is a very, very dangerous thing. And Thomas Jefferson warned about this in his letter in 1820 to William Jarvis. He said to him, "You seem to consider the judges as the ultimate arbiters of all constitutional questions. A very dangerous doctrine indeed, and one which would place us under the despotism of an oligarchy. Our judges are as honest as other men, and not more so, and their power is more dangerous as they are in office for life and not responsible as the other functionaries, that is, the legislative and executive branches, functionaries are, to the elective control. The Constitution has erected no such single tribunal, knowing that to whatever hands confided with corruption of time and party, its members would become despots." Thomas Jefferson feared that the judges would become despots. There's a number of books, I have several in my own library, that talk about judicial tyranny, the imperial judiciary, and so on. People are recognizing today that the judges have become despots. But we can stop that despotism, we can stop that tyranny, if we, the people, learn the law and function as we should as jurors.
Well, let me just intercede here. One of my favorite and really most precious possessions is a book titled The Master Thoughts of Thomas Jefferson. It was compiled by the back in 1907 by the Bar of New York. At that time, our lawyers believed in God, and they, of course, believed in our Constitution. Today, they're not even taught it in law schools. But this is what Jefferson wrote. "It has long been my opinion, and I have never shrunk from its expression, that the germ of dissolution of our federal government is in the constitution of our federal judiciary. For an irresponsible body, for impeachment is scarcely a scarecrow, working like gravity by night and by day, gaining a little today and a little tomorrow, and advancing its noiseless step like a thief over the field of jurisdiction until all shall be usurped from the states, and the government of all be consolidated into one. And to this I am opposed, because when all government, domestic and foreign, in little as in great things, shall be drawn to Washington as the center of all power, it will render powerless the checks of one government over another, and will become as venal and oppressive as the government from which we separated." And, of course, he was talking about Great Britain. So Thomas Jefferson recognized the danger of our courts. Why do we never talk about that today? I mean, we talk about Thomas Jefferson's phrase, separation of church and state, never about his fear of the courts.
And he's right. I mean, he was prescient and looking into the future, seeing the direction things were going, even at that early date of 1820s and so on. And how can we stop judicial tyranny? I think the very first thing is to be educated in what is true law, that is, knowing God's word, what is just and unjust, knowing God's law, and then in our Constitution, federal Constitution, state Constitution, we need to remember the truths. I don't know who's the author of this, but I heard it one time, and I said, that's absolutely accurate. Kind of what are three tenets of tyranny. Any power that can be abused will be abused. This is a basic principle that God's word states, that all men are sinners. All men are fallen, even those who are redeemed in Christ. They're not perfect yet. They're fallen still and are not to be trusted. So any power that can be abused will be abused. Tenet number two is abuse always expands to fill the limits of resistance to it. That is, if there isn't any resistance, the tyranny will just spread like wildfire. It will never stop. And unless we the people rise up and resist tyranny, we can expect it's going to run us over like a steamroller. And tenet number three is basically that. If people do not resist the abuses of others, they will have no one to resist the abuses of themselves and tyranny will prevail. And this is where the jury comes in particularly important. I know that most Americans, when they receive a summons to jury duty, they go, oh no, I don't want to do that. How can I get out of it? What excuse can I come up with? What, you know, any which way that I can get out of jury duty, I want to do that. I hope, Dr. Stan, your listeners and those who are taking the course here in Maryland will have the exact opposite response. When they get a summons, they'll say, wow, praise God, I have the opportunity to do justice. I have the opportunity to stop tyranny. I have the opportunity to resist the abuses of other people. And as people across our land, as we pray, this course will train people across our land, take up that attitude and turn the jury around, that the jury will be able to stop the abuses of other people, so that if we're brought into court and we're dragged up on false charges or charges of violating a law that if the law itself is illegal, we will have people on the jury who understand these principles and will stop the abuses of us as we're dragged into the court system ourselves. It's going to take some time to do that, and we pray God will grant us the time to raise that army of people who really understand the tremendous power and the tremendous importance of the jury, and they'll rejoice when they're summoned for jury duty and encourage other people to do the same rather than cringing and trying to get out of it any which way they can. Well, our founders really developed a threefold formula for preventing tyranny, and each of the elements is very important. We always hear about the checks and balances between the three branches of government, legislative, executive, judicial. That's very important, no doubt about it. But we often don't hear about the second aspect of that, and that's the monopoly of government prevented by the separation of powers in four levels, the federal, state, county, local. And so if you're in a state and you don't care for the way the state is treating you with their laws, you can leave and move to another state. I know I've met a number of people from California who are just itching to leave that state because of, well, things like saying homeschooling is illegal and other crazy things like that. Well, if the states do not have a monopoly of government over the people have the freedom of their feet to leave, and the state better be careful how it handles its citizens. It's going to lose all of its citizens. So if you have all power centralized in one federal government in Washington, D.C., then you've got a monopoly and nobody can escape from the power that that centralized government has, which is why our founders wisely designed very, very few and limited functions that the federal government would have, mostly relating to external things, making peace treaties with other countries or going to war because they're being attacked by another country or invaded and so on, and trade agreements. Those sort of things would be the only thing on external objects that the federal government was designed to handle. And we know that from what Madison said in Federalist Paper 45, very clearly, very limited powers of the federal government because they recognized the grave danger of a monopoly of power. And they wanted the levels of government to be a check against that kind of monopoly developing, especially on the federal level. The third element, checks and balances being first, preventing monopoly by separation of powers of the four levels, the third element to prevent tyranny in government is to recognize the power of an independent jury. That is a jury that judges the law as well as the facts in order to defend our constitutional republic. For example, here in Maryland, it's built right into our Declaration of Rights, which is kind of the Bill of Rights for the state of Maryland, much expanded over the federal Bill of Rights. And it says this in our Declaration of Rights, number 23. In the trial of all criminal cases, the jury shall be the judges of law as well as of fact, except the court may pass upon the sufficiency of evidence to sustain a conviction. Very clearly, and that's expressed, I think, in at least one other state constitution, a very similar phrasing, that our founders believed that the jury was to judge the facts and not just to judge the law, not just the facts in the court cases. Thomas Jefferson put it this way, and I think this is important to remember. He said, I consider trial by jury as the only anchor ever yet imagined by man by which a government can be held to the principles of its Constitution. Notice what Jefferson is saying there, that trial by jury is the only way to keep a government honest, to keep a government in line with the principles of its Constitution. How can a jury do that if the jury just judges the facts in a case? The jury can only keep the government in line, keep the government accountable to its constitutional principles if the jury actually judges the law. If they just judge the facts, they do what the judge tells them, they follow his orders like sheep, then they will never keep the government in line. They will never keep the government to the principles of its constitution. And I know that Thomas Jefferson saw this so clearly, that the jury is an absolutely essential function to prevent tyranny, and it's designed to be the ultimate check against tyranny.
All right, David, before you go on, let's go ahead and get your telephone number and your web page out one more time.
Yes. Our toll-free number at Institute on the Constitution is 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. And our website is iotconline.com.
And of course, go ahead.
That's iotconline.com.
And of course, the Institute supports Radio Liberty, and we support them. We think what they're doing is so vitally important. Well, David, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. You know, when this truth begins to dawn on the minds of students, and I've had this experience because I've taught this course several times already, it's amazing to see the change in perspective from some who, you know, having studied the Constitution and knowing how desperately far away from following the Constitution we are, how many violations take place on a daily basis, from despair to hope. There is hope for America. We can actually restore the republic. We can force the government to abide by the terms of our contract with our government, which is what our Constitution essentially is. It's like, government, we give you permission to do X, Y, and Z, but not A, B, and C. Well, the federal government's doing the whole alphabet, even though they have no permission to do all those things. They're doing them, and they're getting away with it because we, the people, haven't done our job of knowing what the limits on the federal government and the limits on our state government are by understanding the Constitution, both on the federal and state level. And by the way, we have a course here in Maryland on our Maryland State Constitution, and we're encouraging some folks around the country, and I would encourage any of your listeners who want to participate in this, is of beginning a study group on their state constitution with the aim of developing a course for all 50 states that ultimately people all over the country, whatever state they're in, could take a course on their state constitution so that they as well would be equipped on the state level to judge laws as to whether they're legitimate or illegitimate, to judge candidates who are making promises as to whether their promises are in accordance with the Constitution of that state or a violation of the Constitution. All of those things need to happen. It's like climbing a mountain, thinking of 50 courses that have to be put together, but that's where we're headed. And that's what we need to be able to bring government back to the terms of the contract we, the people, have made with it. As if I've used this analogy before, as if you've gone to the auto repair mechanic and you signed a contract on the way out, giving him permission to change the oil, change the spark plugs, tune it up or whatever, come back at the end of the day and he's done an overhaul on your transmission and he's replaced not just spark plugs but the crankshaft or something, and you've got a $5,000 bill there. You say, well, I'm not paying this. And they said, yeah, well, you are going to pay this. You're not getting the car unless you pay this. I'm not paying this because I signed a contract with you, the mechanic, giving you limited permission to do certain definite enumerated items and only those things. Well, that's what our contract is with the federal government through the Constitution. And it's doing most of what it's doing and most of the money it's spending completely outside the terms of the contract. It's breaking the law.
Hey, we're out of time, David. God bless you.
Thank you very much.
And remember, ladies and gentlemen, we do have a secret government that is behind all of these terrible things going on. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and we hope that you enjoy our monthly program with Pastor David Whitney. Well, this is the time when I really need to remind all of our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there and you agree with us that we're involved in a spiritual battle, that there really are secret organizations. Now, of course, the Council on Foreign Relations certainly controls all of the political candidates running at the present time. John McCain's a member. Hillary Clinton's husband is a member. Obama's chief advisor, who is Zygmunt Brzezinski, is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, chief foreign policy advisor. They're all control both political parties, never to give the suckers an even chance. If you doubt this is the way it's set up, you need to read the book written by Bill Clinton's mentor, Professor Carol Quigley. And, of course, on pages 1247 and 1248, he talks about how we need two political parties essentially the same. And then, of course, the people can go to the polls every 4 years and vote the rascals out. But the foreign and domestic policies won't change. Professor Quigley was much aligned with this elite group he talks about. He recognized, of course, this whole movement, the Anglo-American establishment, had its origin in a secret society, and that's the strength and the importance of his book, and, of course, the fact that it was actually actively suppressed by these people is brought out in an interview we have with Professor Quigley, where you can get with the Tragedy and Hope special. So remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, we wanted to mention that we talked about what happened at Waco, the fact that the professional killers were sent in, a team of special forces. This is brought out in a DVD we have called Waco, A New Revelation, and they killed the women and children. And, of course, there's two people there who were interviewed there who had actually talked to the people from the special forces who had been part of this murderous team. And then, of course, you get into the background of Timothy McVeigh, accused of, and he was certainly involved with the blowing up the Murrah building. He told both his sister, Jennifer McVeigh, he told the man who was in the prison cell next to him, who wrote a book entitled A Secret Worth Dying For, and then Terry Nichols. It all said Timothy McVeigh was part of a Special Forces hit team. What about O.J. Simpson? You need to get our four-tape set on O.J. Simpson because you'll hear one of the authors telling about how he was contacted by a member of the Special hit team that killed, of course, O.J. Simpson's wife. And the whole idea was to create a race war in America to turn black against white. And to this very day, most blacks believe O.J. was framed, and most whites believe he was innocent. Well, I'm firmly convinced from other information we have that there was a Special Forces team. And if you ever saw the picture on the front page of Time magazine of O.J. Simpson at that time, they darkened his skin so it looked very black. Why? Well, because they wanted to turn black against white and white against black and divide our nation. They've done a pretty good job of it, don't you think? Have you made arrangements to look after yourself in the case of the coming emergency? I really believe it's coming. You're hearing increasing information about the food shortages, the rice shortage, the possibility of a wheat and of course, cooking oil shortage. And you need to begin making preparations to look after yourself for the difficult times that lie ahead. If you have not yet gotten one of our emergency food catalogs, we'd be glad to send it to you. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like to get a free copy of the emergency food catalog or the health catalog or the regular catalog on the various products we have. If you wonder about weather modification, I mentioned this at the beginning of the program, we have a book on weather modification. We have a DVD on weather modification. We have a four-tape set on weather modification. They know how to manage and to distort the weather. Why do you think that they can't get into the fields in Arkansas to plant the rice? Why do you think there's a great drought in Australia? There are people who really want to fulfill the prophecies of Revelation 6:8, where a quarter of the world's population would be eliminated, and, of course, part of that would be by famine. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. Go there. You can listen to our programs, watch our DVDs, read our newsletters, and then please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. We need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next views, they're going to be the views of William H. Kennedy. That's William H. Kennedy, who, is, of course, lives on the East Coast. He's kind enough to stay up this terrible hour. It's midnight back there, but he wants to be with us. Of course, we're going to be talking about his webpage, which is WilliamHKennedy.com, WilliamHKennedy.com. We'll be talking a little bit about, of course, the Bilderbergers, and we carry actually two books on the Bilderbergers, the Bilderbergers, and then, of course, the Bilderberger Diary, but we really carry a third book, and it was written by William Kennedy. It's called Satanic Crimes. Now, what are the Bilderbergers? Why, they are a group of the most powerful and group of men who control the media in America and in Europe, who control the banking, who control the corporations, and perhaps only 140, 150 of them, men of fabulous wealth. But, of course, what people do not understand, and even the writers of several books on this do not understand, the satanic nature and the involvement of the Bilderbergers. And, of course, that's the importance of William H. Kennedy's book, Satanic Crimes. We have a four-tape set on satanic crimes. We have the book on satanic crimes. We carry the other two books, excellent, the one by Daniel Estulin on the Bilderbergers, and then, of course, the Bilderberger Diary by James Tucker. We have even a DVD on the Bilderbergers, and, of course, it's put out by our good friend Alex Jones, going into their plan to eliminate the large part of the population of the world through these population control programs that they are fostering. But until you understand the spiritual nature of what's going on, you can't understand what's going on today. Now, William has completed a new DVD. We carried for some time his book, Lucifer's Lodge. Now, William is a traditional Catholic, so what I'm saying, of course, comes from the point of view of a traditional Catholic. It was about, of course, homosexuality in the Catholic seminaries. But what was really shocking about the DVD was it starts with a clip, an interview with Malachi Martin, who I actually interviewed, and you'll actually see him there on the screen, and he's being interviewed. He's talking about the fact that there was actually an effort to determine what percentage of the priests had experimented or engaged in active homosexuality, and I'll let Sonny William give you the figures, but what percentage of the priests were involved with Satanism? And I think it was about 1 to 3%. Of course, the people who are interviewing Malachi challenged him, where did you get those figures? And he says, they came because the Pope was actually arranging a survey to find out what was happening. And the man who was there sitting there, the second interviewer, said, that's right, I know that's to be true. Well, the interesting thing about the clip is it was never broadcast in America. It was never broadcast in America. Why? Because they can't let the people know that this sort of thing goes on any more than they could let the people know that the same sort of things are going on in the Protestant church as well, and people posing as ministers of the gospel who have a different agenda. William, thank you so very much for being with us so late at night.
No problem, Dr. Stan. Shows on Satanism are usually late-night sorts of things anyway.
Well, of course, people don't like to think about this. They don't like to think about the supernatural or that there really are these truly demonic forces. How did you ever get hold of that copy, that clip of Malachi Martin? I'd never seen it before.
Well, someone had heard me on the radio, and they sent me a bootleg stolen copy of it because, as you said earlier, it was a suppressed video by the American Family Association, a Catholic group, and it was supposed to air on cable TV in New York.
And, of course, they couldn't allow this information to get out to the Catholics or to the Protestants. Well, William, of course, you knew Father Martin. We had an opportunity to meet him talk to him a number of times, and he was truly an amazing individual, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, Father Malachy Martin. He actually pronounced his name Malachy, so I tend to call him that. But I'll call him Father Martin. He didn't mind if people called him Father Malachy. But he was a former Jesuit. He was a high-ranking Vatican official. He was an aide to Cardinal Bea, and he was a personal advisor to two popes back in the early 1960s. In 1965, he asked Pope Paul if he could leave the Jesuits but remain a Roman Catholic priest, and then he moved to New York. Now, this video I got from the American Family Association was taped in 1996, and in it, Malachy Martin said basically what he told me a few months before that there was a major homosexual scandal within the Roman Catholic Church, that the cardinals and bishops were protecting perverts, and that about 7 to 12% of the Catholic priests had at least experimented with homosexuality on some level, and 1 to 3% were actually satanic pedophiles, which is what my book and film Lucifer's Lodge is all about. The film will be out in another month. I just have to work out a few sound problems with the sound engineer, but it will be for sale soon. And it's quite amazing because at the time I was much like the man in the video who was highly skeptical back in 1996. But just to fast forward a bit, Father Martin died in 1999. And in 2002, the Boston Globe broke a series of articles which proved everything that Malachy Martin said in that original banned video. And it's quite shocking. They started to run stories about priests who were involved in nothing less than satanic ritual abuse. For example, the first story that popped up was a fellow named Monsignor Frederick Ryan, who was the a bigwig in the Archdiocese of Boston under cardinal law, and he had tattooed a boy with a devil figure and sexually abused him. Now, the rest of the film in the book, it just goes on and on with these similar stories like that. I have Father Lawrence Brett, who was a child molester and a vampire. He used to draw blood and drink the blood of his victims. This is all documented. Shocking things. There is Father Chet Warren, who was out in Ohio, and he had sexually abused young girls, preteen girls, in a coffin.
Hold that thought.
In satanic
Hold that thought. Very good. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course William is telling us that basically, of course, Father Malachy actually died in 1999, but a couple of years later, the Boston Globe began to run a series of stories based upon the satanic and ritual abuse of children by Catholic priests. And of course, as you know, this really has gotten a lot of coverage across America, but they never get into the satanic element. And of course, he's just simply quoting from the newspaper articles which are out there. And of course, many of these people highly placed in the Catholic Church. And what happens when they are uncovered? Why, of course, they get transferred to another area where they can do it, or they get transferred to Rome where they're promoted even to a higher level. And that's what really was so disturbing about this story, because some of these people who had been covering for the satanic pedophile priests were actually taken to Rome, weren't they? And where they were still allowed to continue giving the sacraments.
Well, it's quite shocking, Dr. Stan, because Cardinal Bernard Lara of Boston, not only was he transferred to Rome, but he was given a promotion. He was put in charge of one of the oldest Christian church in Christendom. In 325 A.D., when Constantine made Christianity the official religion of the Roman Empire, one of the first churches opened in Rome was dedicated to, called St. Mary, and before then, Christians used to meet in people's houses, basically. There were no churches. So Cardinal Bernard Law was put in charge of one of the oldest churches in Christendom, and he was allowed to perform a mass for Pope John Paul II when he died, and he was also allowed to vote for Pope Benedict the 16th a couple years ago. So these cardinals and bishops who protected satanic pedophile priests were actually promoted. Another one was Bishop Brendan Kamensky of Wexford, Ireland. He protected a pedophile named Father Sean Fortune, who was also a Satanist, and he was given a promotion in Rome and the Vatican. So the Roman Catholic Church has a policy of rewarding bishops and cardinals who protect pedophile priests, not punishing them or banishing them.
What do you think? Is it the church, or do you think there are people just planted in key positions who are doing this? Certainly is not the entire church, is it?
Well, no. I mean, you have to remember, Dr. Stan, there are 1 billion Roman Catholics in the world, and most of them condemn all these activities, including the clergy. Now, there have always been perverts in the church. No one can deny that. But after World War II, the perverts took over the Roman Catholic Church, and that's the distinction. Now, there's a group out there called SNAP, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, and they just pointed out when the Pope visited here that there are 19 U.S. bishops who were accused of sexually abusing children or vulnerable adults who did not face criminal prosecution because of statute of limitation laws here. And I should say, in all of this, Dr. Stan, the sexual abuse of vulnerable adults has been ignored, and these are like people who are mental patients in psychiatric institutions who, you know, that's just as bad as raping a child, really, because when these people would tell a psychiatrist or nurse that they were sexually abused by the priest, no one believed them because they were psychotic. I'm talking about people who think they're Napoleon. People like that, no one would believe them, and they were targeted by these perverts. And as I say, 19 bishops in the United States alone were charged. Most of them resigned, but none of them faced criminal prosecution. Now, there was a bishop in Poland who had to resign because he was giving women's underwear and perfume and makeup to seminarians he was sexually involved with. So we have a high-ranking problem. Now, in 1962, there was a document drawn in Rome called the Sin of Solicitation, and this was a secret Vatican document that went out to every cardinal and bishop and seminary head in the world in the Roman Catholic Church, and it said to do three things when a charge of sex came against a priest. Number one, have everyone involved swear secrecy under threat of excommunication, including not going to the police. Number two, if at all possible, transfer the priest to another area so there's no more scandal. And number three, pay off victims if necessary to have them remain silent. So this document came out in 62. It was released, you know, it was leaked out to the press a couple years ago in 2003. And the current Pope, Benedict XVI, when he was Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, was his name before he became Pope, in 2003 he said that that document still applies. Now, all this nonsense, when he came over here and met some very select victims of clerical abuse in Washington, D.C., he did not meet with the founders of the SNAP group, the survivors of those abused by priests, Barbara Blaine, and people like that. He met with, you know, highly selected people who weren't going to say anything too confrontational to him. So that was just a big farce, his coming over here and meeting with survivors. It was a lot of nonsense. If we lived in any kind of a just world, Benedict XVI would be tried for crimes against humanity for the things that he did. But he's a major power broker. The Vatican controls 1/4 of the world's gold supply, and with the shaky economy all over the world, that makes him a much more important person than he was even, say, 10 or 20 years ago. The Pope's power is consolidated just off of the gold holdings alone, nothing else.
Well, of course, we actually carry a film. I know you've seen it. It's called Rape of the Soul. It was put out by another conservative Catholic concerned about Catholic art and how, of course, Catholic art was being used to push pornography and really to by subliminal messages to impact on the minds of the Catholics who saw that art.
Well, that was a very bizarre film in that he made some very, very good points. Now, the art that he showed in that film was primarily made after the Second Vatican Council, which was the great liberalizing of the Roman Catholic Church in the mid-1960s. So this new modern art, not only was there subliminal pedophilia art, but there was also subliminal satanic art, as in the Chicago Cathedral. It's quite shocking. They have demonic images right in the marble facings and things like that. That's a film well worth seeing, by the way.
We do actually offer that film. It's called Rape of the Soul, and it's important for people to understand that they hide their symbols and imagery in plain sight. And I'm certainly not picking on the Catholics, because we have problems in the Catholic Church. We have problems in the Jewish Church. We have the people who want to destroy the Judeo-Christian faith are working at every level of society today. And it's just that they're so very obvious within the Catholic Church, but nobody ever wants to talk about how the 30 million member National Association of Evangelical Protestant Christians, they call them a National Association of Evangelical Christians, but they are Protestant. This man was a cocaine user, he was a homosexual, and he was using his position there, heading this 30 million strong organization to undermine Christianity, certainly in the military and elsewhere. But the average Christian had no idea what their leaders were doing, and believe me, he would not have been there if it hadn't been that there were other Christian leaders who put him in that position of power. So they didn't vote for him. Their leaders voted for the people who put him there. And they have infiltrated the upper echelons of Christendom and of the Jewish faith, and they are using that to destroy Western civilization. People don't understand there really are people out there who have a different worldview. Most Satanists don't understand what it's all about, but believe me, the leaders of this thing do. For they worship a different God, and until people understand that, nothing going on in the world today really makes sense. Well, William, certainly your website is amazing. You've got all sorts of fascinating things there. You actually have there several examples of the initiation ceremony into Skull and Bones. Now, remember, both our president and the man who ran against him in 1990, Senator John Kerry, came from Skull and Bones, which is a Luciferian organization. That's a strong thing to say. But when Tim Russert asked each man, on television before and during the course of the 2004 presidential contest, what about Skull and Bones? Both men said, oh, it's so secret, we can't describe it. Well, what is their allegiance? Is their allegiance to America or to this secret organization they've sworn horrible blood oaths to? Would you like to tell us what people will see on your website, WilliamHKennedy.com, about Skull and Bones?
Well, they go there and click on the Satanic Crime Multimedia page and go to the Skull and Bones section. Some people actually filmed the courtyard ceremony of the Skull and Bones fraternity at Yale University. And what they will see is one of the students is dressed up as the devil with horns, and the initiates will kneel before the devil and kiss a skull, and they will also perform a mock human sacrifice on another member. Now, another fellow hopped over into this courtyard and took some photos, and what he discovered was a very bizarre sacrificial altar that looks a little bit like a fountain, and it has two robed skeletons looking at each other holding a skull. And there was what was can only be described as blood that was in a sort of fountain-type cement object. There was also a divination wheel, kind of like you'd see on a tarot card, a wheel of fortune that these people spun for some reason. I don't know the full details of that. But it's very occult, very divination-oriented.
And, of course, if you read Alexandra Robbins' book, which we carry incidentally, and you'll hear, you can hear my interview with her in our four-tape set on Skull and Bone. But, there, of course, she talks about how down in the basement they have all these swastikas all over the walls, swastikas. I wonder why they're there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is William H. Kennedy, and we're talking about the Skull and Bone Society, certainly one of the most powerful organizations in America today, a secret society organized back in, I think it was about 1833, has strong ties into the ancient mystery religions, into the Illuminati, into all of the secret societies, and maintains its power. It's not simply a college fraternity. It is a way of life, because, of course, if you are part of Skull and Bones, your life is laid out for you, and you will be richly rewarded as long as you do what you're told. We actually, of course, have a four-tape set on Skull and Bones, where we interview not only Alexandra Robbins and other people who have written about Skull and Bones, but the daughter of a member of Skull and Bones, who provided me with a membership list. So we actually provided the membership list of Skull and Bones going up until the early 1980s. And, of course, you can see all the members of the Bush family. It wasn't simply George Bush and his father and his grandfather, but this goes from generations to generations, powerful families, the families who rule the world and control our government, people like McGeorge Bundy, who got us instrumental in getting us into the Vietnam War, and, of course, instrumental in the fact that we sent those boys in to die at the Bay of Pigs and never intended to provide them with the air cover or with the supplies that we guaranteed them. They were simply sent in there to die. McGeorge Bundy, a very good friend of a man named Henry Stimson, who is also a member of Skull and Bones, who was Secretary of the Army at the time of the Second World War and instrumental in getting us into the Second World War. They were all Skull and Bones. They, of course, were members of the Council on Foreign Relations. They were part of the elite that rules our country, that takes us from war to war to war. And people don't understand how we get into these wars. Oh, shucks. We just made another mistake. Oh, we're so sorry. There was no Gulf of Tonkin incident. We thought there was one. And 58,000 American boys died, but we never talk about the 3 million Vietnamese who died as if they're totally unimportant. And remember, the man instrumental in that was McGeorge Bundy, member of Skull and Bones, member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Go right ahead, William.
Well, it's quite shocking because at the University of Florida last year, you can see on my webpage, williamhkennedy.com, a student named Andrew Meyer confronted John Kerry about his membership in the Skull and Bones. Now, when you see the film, the second Andrew Meyer mentioned the Skull and Bones, the security people, the policemen there, grabbed him, dragged him to the back of the auditorium, and used electricity on him. They tased him. He screamed out, "Don't tase me, bro," in desperation. He didn't want to be tortured. He really didn't do anything wrong. He was dragged away, tortured, arrested, and John Kerry never answered the question about the Skull and Bones. That's the bizarre thing. Obviously, these security forces were under orders that if the Skull and Bones was mentioned, to get rid of the person who said it and torture him. Now, I have the film from two angles, and the second Andrew Meyer says Skull and Bones, you can see the chief of security give a slitting of the throat sign with his hand. And that's a secret society symbol for someone who has betrayed the organization. You can see this right in the film. The film that was shown on TV is from a different angle. I found another film which you can actually see the slashing of the throat gesture, a split second after he mentioned the Skull and Bones. So we're dealing with people. If you even ask them the wrong question,
hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Our guest is William Kennedy, and he's certainly talking about what happened to a student who, in Florida, who had asked John Kerry during the 2004 president's election about his membership in Skull and Bones. And of course, he was dragged away and then tasered. No reason to taser him. He wasn't any harm to anybody, but, of course, they wanted to punish him. Why? Because he asked about this secret society. Of course, it is a important part of the Brotherhood of Darkness that rules our nation. So, and William was saying that he actually has on his website a film, not the one that was shown on television, but where you'll see the chief of security making a motion as if to slit the throat on this man, running his finger across his own throat. And that was, of course, the symbol for these thugs to move in, of course, to grab this guy. What was his crime? Why, he'd asked a question. It asked about Skull and Bones, one of the most secret of all secret societies in America today. And we're supposed to believe it's just, just an old college fraternity. And yet, of course, when Tim Russert asked both George W. Bush and John Kerry about the Skull and Bones Society in separate interviews during the 2004 elections, both men said, why, that it's so secret, we can't even speak about it. Well, if it's so secret, then how could they be running for the presidency? Where is their loyalty to Skull and Bones, the secret Luciferian organization they've sworn their allegiance to, or is it to the United States and our Constitution? Go right ahead, William.
Well, it's very... star, Dr. Stan, because I've been listening to some older material on this by people like... Myron Fagan and Robin Welsh. Now, Robert Welsh, these are people who 10 or 15 years ago I would have laughed at. But in checking their facts, they were talking about these sorts of things years ago, and it's all turning out to be true. Now, I looked up at Harvard University in 1789. The president of Harvard, David Papin, gave a speech where he warned the graduating class of Harvard against the dangers of the Illuminati. This is, you know, public record, though you never hear anything about it. And that's really what we're looking at. That's just as good a name as any. And there's three interlocking secret societies. There's the Skull and Bones Society, the Bohemian Grove in California, and a group you mentioned earlier, the Bilderberg Group. Now, all three of these groups practice satanic ceremonies. Now, they have more public groups, like the Center on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Club of Rome, the Pilgrim Society. It's all more or less the same people who run these organizations. Now, there are some fringe people who aren't involved with the satanic ritual part, but that's a secondary issue because they are controlled by people who are involved in these satanic groups. Now, the Bilderberg Group, which is in Europe, it was founded in the 1950s by the royal heads of Europe and American industrialists. They meet every year in secret. Now, if you want to be any kind of a power player in the world, you have to attend a Bilderberg meeting. For example, Tony Blair attended a Bilderberg meeting, and then he was made Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. Now he's running for the presidency of the European Union. Bill Clinton attended a Bilderberg meeting, and soon after he was made President of the United States.
It doesn't always work that way. John Edwards attended the Bilderberg meeting, and that's, of course, why John Kerry picked him to be his vice presidential nominee. And of course, John, poor old John, didn't do very well this time running against Hillary and Barack Obama. But, you know, he was the Bilderberger choice.
Well, you have to remember, Hillary Clinton has attended Bilderberg meetings, too.
Sure.
And as far as the presidential election between Bush and Kerry, it was a matter of which Skull and Bones Bilderberg member you wanted in the White House. Now, the difference is that George W. Bush had attended both groups. He was a Skull and Bones member and a Bilderberger, but Kerry was merely a Skull and Bones member, so I think Bush had a little precedence. But when you're up on this level, now it really doesn't matter when it's a choice of which Skull and Bonesman or which Bilderberger you want. If there's competition on that level, is secondary, because you certainly don't see a single mother from a housing project being able to run for president. You know, it's just people from these elite groups.
And, of course, whichever one wins in this coming November, their candidate's going to win. They're going to control him because if they didn't, of course, he'd take a trip to Dallas like John Fitzgerald Kennedy did. There's no question they killed him anymore. There's a question that they killed Martin Luther King. If you'd like to get a book on how they murdered Martin Luther King, it's called An Act of State. We carry it. Of course, we have a 4-tape set on the murder of King. Of course, we're going to be doing more programs on the murder of Bobby Kennedy. These things happen in America. How could they happen in America and people don't know? Why, very simply, we have freedom of the press, freedom to suppress the truth. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is William H. Kennedy. So you go ahead and pick up the story there, William.
Well, as I was saying, Dr. Stan, it doesn't particularly matter that we have a choice between different members of these interlocking fraternities, because there's only maybe 200 or 300 of them anyway. So out of the 6 billion people on this planet, these 200 or 300 members of the Bohemian Grove, Skull and Bones, and Bilderberg Group and other affiliate groups like the Club of Rome, Pilgrim Society, Trilateral Commission, and Center for Foreign Relations, it's all the same 200 or 300 people. So it's really democracy in that sense is a farce. There's really no such thing, nor is there any free market capitalism in this country. These same 300 people ultimately control the political and economic destiny of the human race. And what's quite frightening is the top leadership are all involved in Luciferian satanic ceremonies.
And I think really, of course, that this is the significant thing that William has brought out and that what we want to bring out. Lots of people talk about the Bilderbergers and they talk about the Council on Foreign Relations, but they never get into the spiritual forces behind them or the fact that, you know, Sidney, if you were to, you know, to join into this, if you were, of course, to put yourself under the directionship of Lucifer, you could, of course, get great wealth and great power, as certainly one of the people in music do. Many people in the music industry are frank Satanists. That's covered in our DVDs called They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. But as you begin looking into these people of great wealth and great power, and you wonder how at a very young age they could, of course, get to where they are. Certainly Marie Strong, a multi-billionaire, a close associate of the Rockefellers. I mean, he was a multi-millionaire, a billionaire by the time he was 30 years of age. But, of course, when you understand he's deeply involved in the occult, you begin to understand where he gets his power, where he gets his wealth, where he gets, of course, his ability to control the destiny of the world. And I think this is really what's so important about William's ministry, is that he's bringing out the occult nature of so much of what's going on. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, definitely so, Dr. Stan, and I'll give you a very bizarre example. There's a serial killer in Belgium who's in prison now named Marc Dutroux, who was arrested in the mid-90s. He's doing life in jail. Now, he has admitted to being a kidnapper of children for the Bilderberg Group.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, our guest is William H. Kennedy. He was just simply talking about a pedophile murderer who's in prison in Europe, who has admitted that he was kidnapping children to be used in satanic rituals by members of the Bilderbergers. I bet you've never read that in your papers. In fact, you probably won't even read about the Bilderbergers in your newspapers. Why? Because, of course, we have freedom of the press. That means the people who own the press have the freedom to suppress the information. And, of course, up until the last year, I've never seen a mention of the Bilderbergers in any newspaper. There were one or two small mentions of it recently. Just as so, for 50 years, you never saw a mention of the Council on Foreign Relations. Now it's discussed all the time, this one, that one, the other one, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, but nobody will ever tell you it's a front for a secret occult organization. That, of course, is a secret that they don't want you to know. But, of course, the Bilderbergers is far more secret than the Council on Foreign Relations, although it has an overlapping membership. Well, before we go on, William, I want you to tell our listeners how to get to your website, how, of course, they can get your information that you have, and, of course, and hopefully looking forward to the ready availability of that DVD. I think we'll be carrying it, try to get it out. And then if you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to call in, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But, William, why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners how they can get to your website and what they're going to find there.
It's quite simple. You just go to williamhkennedy.com, williamhkennedy.com, and I've set up 6 multimedia pages. One is on occult history. One is on satanic crime. One is on contemporary witchcraft. Those are the 3 major ones. Now, what I've done is I've collected all the best films from Google Video and YouTube that are on occult subjects, and I've simply put links to them. I've organized them. Now, I have a whole section on the Bilderberg Group in the Satanic Crime section, and you can see how this Mark Dutroux. I'll give you an example. When Dutroux was on trial, the judge involved called for people to come forward, and 10 women came forward, and they started pointing out that they were victims of Dutroux's cult and that they were sexually abused by high-ranking members of the Bilderberg Group, including the King of Belgium and the Belgian Foreign Secretary, a man named Willy Claus. Willy Claus was responsible for the Rwandan genocide, and he was also accused of being involved in these satanic rituals with Mark Dutroux. Now, he was forced to resign as Secretary General of the United Nations NATO, for taking bribes from a helicopter company a few years ago. Now, if all this weren't bad enough, last year in 2007, here's a link for you, but you mentioned rock and roll earlier. He did a TV ad for Limbo Mania, which is a big heavy metal rock music concert they have in Belgium, and he went right on Belgium television and performed a satanic summoning ceremony, which you can see this at williamhkennedy.com in the Bilderberg section, and it's quite bizarre. It's right up on YouTube. Now, when you put all these links together, these people are no longer even hiding the fact that they are Satanists. They don't even care anymore. Now, just in conclusion, to show you how much the mainstream media covers this up, in 1996, I was living in England, and when this whole Mark Dutroux thing came out, the people in Belgium were disgusted, and they had a huge rally in Belgium, and it was the largest demonstration in world history, they say, between 350,000 and 400,000 Belgians, all dressed in white, and they converged on this one area in Belgium, and they call this the White March. Now, I saw this, and when I came back to the United States at Christmas to visit my family and friends, no one in this country had even heard about it.
How would you conceal a demonstration of 350 to 400,000 people all dressed in white against the Bilderbergers? Why, we have freedom of the press, ladies and gentlemen. Freedom of the press means that they can suppress whatever they want to. Our media in America, controlled by 5 major corporations, covered in a book called The New Media Monopoly by Professor Ben Bagdikian, who I've talked to, and of course, lives up in Berkeley at the present time. And understand, ladies and gentlemen, you're not getting the truth from the media. The media is tightly controlled, and when you see them having programs day after day, you know they're focusing your attention on certain specific things. When they totally delete a major story, it's something they do not want you to know about. And, of course, if we understood that the people who really control the governments of Europe and the United States are involved in satanic activity and satanic pedophilia, why, of course, we can't let the public know that. They might, of course, begin to realize the true spiritual nature of the battle in which we're engaged. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. William, what sort of response have you gotten to the material you're putting out? Because you certainly have, I think, the finest website on this material I know of.
Oh, it's been very positive. I've had hundreds of thousands of hits. And as I say, I peruse the Internet every day looking for this stuff, and it's certainly out there. And I've just organized it in a clear and cogent fashion. Most people who come to my website are quite shocked because most of the stories I bring out are covered by the mainstream media, but the distinction is they're put on the back burner of coverage. They're not on the front page of a newspaper. They'll be on some obscure web page that's hard to get to, like on the BBC or whatever Associated Press. It's out there. I've just gone out and found it and pulled it all together and organized it. That's all I've done. My web pages are a big link section, and I think it's urgent that people educate themselves in this area. Now, I have an occult history multimedia page where people can, you know, examine documentary films on Kabbalah and alchemy, the Knights Templar, Freemasonry, Rosicrucianism, spiritualism, theosophy, the New Age movement, mysticism, astrology, and divination. You know, it's very important that people know something about this because these are ultimately the forces that drive our politics and our economy. This is like the common denominator, occultism. It's certainly not Christianity. And this should come as no surprise to us, Dr. Stan, because Jesus denied really being in charge of this place in the sense the prince of this world in the Bible is actually Lucifer. So Lucifer is the kind of vending machine god of these super rich people. They perform these rituals and they get billions of dollars. You know, so the Christian God is not a vending machine. If you honor the Christian God, this life is a test for the next life. So he might, like, test your resolve and not give you money. It's the man downstairs who will give you unwarranted wealth. But what goes around comes around, and what these rich people don't realize is they'll have a price to pay, if not in this life, in the next life.
And I think that's such an interesting analogy. For those of you out there in the listening audience who have not yet seen the DVD called The Secret, it's been featured by, certainly by Oprah Winfrey on several occasions on her afternoon television program. She pushes this. Oprah Winfrey, of course, has pushed Rhonda Byrne's video and book, The Secret. But if you watch the DVD, why, of course, you'll find out that life is just like, well, having a genie. And, of course, they show the genie there, this just big old giant figure. And all you have to do is apply her law of attraction, which, of course, is an occult means of mind control, and of course begin to use that, and the genie will provide whatever you want, and it's really fascinating. The whole thing is based on the occult, and millions of Americans have been introduced to the occult through Oprah Winfrey's ministry there on CBS. But then, of course, you understand that the enemy hides their symbols in plain sight. And you see them every day, and you don't recognize them. For instance, on the back of the dollar bill, over the pyramid there, you'll see a triangle that contains a glorified eye. The eye, of course, is one of the major symbols, of course, of the occult. And look on the right lower quadrant of the CBS. When you're watching CBS, you'll see that same or very, very similar eye, their emblem, of course, of CBS, their logo. And, of course, that's because CBS was organized originally by the Central Intelligence Agency, the people that are deeply involved in the occult. What about, there's a new movie out that you actually sent to me. It comes out of England. Of course, it was put on by the BBC. Totally suppressed in America. We can't get it over here. Can't even get it on DVD. But it goes into the background of course, Alan Dulles, who formed the CIA. What's that all about? The men who look at goats?
The men who stare at goats. The men who stare at goats. Journals. I found it's actually by Channel 4 in the United Kingdom, which is one of their major networks. A man named John Ronson made it, and he went and looked into the history of the CIA, and what he discovered was Avery Dulles and his brother
This Alan Dulles or?
This Avery Dulles, I'm sorry, John Foster Dulles was the Secretary of State,
right.
And his brother Dulles was the founder of the CIA.
That was Alan Dulles.
Right, and John Foster Dulles' son, Avery Dulles, who I mentioned, is actually a Roman Catholic cardinal. So this all kind of ties in together bizarrely. Now, Dulles, who founded the CIA, what he did after World War II was he started what's called the MK Ultra program, which is bought out in this film, The Men Who Stare at Goats. And what he did is he recruited psychics from seances to try and spy on the Russians using ESP and what later became known as remote viewing. Now, in this film, The Men Who Stare at Goats, why it's called that is that there was a group within the U.S. Army called the 1st Earth Battalion, and this was a special forces unit, and what they were trying to do was use the power of their mind to kill other human beings. And what they did is they practiced on goats. They tried to give a death stare. And I should point out, Dr. Stan, this is what our tax money goes to fund. This was a U.S. Army organization, which eventually broke up in 1995. Now, what happened after they dissolved this kind of 1st Earth Battalion, as is brought out in this film, the people who were involved with it went public. One of the famous ones is a guy named Ed Dames, who's on a lot of these occult radio shows out there. Now, where it kind of got sick, where this spilled over to the general population, is during the Hale-Bopp comet phenomenon in 1996, one of these psychics who worked for the U.S. Army formerly, he went on a radio show and said there was a UFO that was right beside the Hale-Bopp comet, and this was broadcast, you know, on a nationally syndicated radio show, and those people in the Heaven's Gate cult out in California kind of picked up on this, and that's one of the big reasons, the major factors they all committed suicide, is they thought their souls were going to float up and hop on this UFO and they were going to fly away to heaven. So when these dangerous ideas get leaked out into the general population by these government-funded psychics, you know, it's a life-and-death situation. Now, it seems kind of humorous when you first look at this, but when you discover when these crazy ideas actually get released by authoritative people from the U.S. military, kooky groups like the Heaven's Gate group will commit suicide over it. So it's a very serious and dangerous matter. Now, John Ronson
Have you ever looked into that cult in South America that you remember where I think 1,000 people drank the Kool-Aid and were killed? Certainly, there's strong implications that that was a CIA operation. Just wanted to see what you can convince people of. Are there shoots of that?
The Jonestown Group?
Jonestown Group, right.
Yeah, Jim Jones was actually a CIA informant. They pretty much figured that much of it out. And they used him and people in his church down there in Jonestown to basically as CIA spies down there. Now, if they used mind control, certainly Jim Jones used mind control on his followers. Where he ultimately got it is unclear, but there is a clear and distinct CIA link to the whole Jonestown suicide.
Right. I think that it's important for people to understand that the purpose of the military was to tap into the supernatural, to tap into the power that is there in the other dimension. And, of course, you do not want to do that under any circumstances. There is a supernatural. Certainly, if you are a Christian and you believe in that the Bible is accurate, Jesus performed all sorts of supernatural things. He rose again after being dead for 3 days. He raised other people from the dead. He appeared in sealed rooms. He would materialize and dematerialize. There is a supernatural element. There's a supernatural element which involves the Christian side of the equation. There's a supernatural element that on the other side of the equation. And that was the element that the military and the CIA were trying to tap into, was a supernatural element from the dark side. Would that be a fair appraisal?
Oh, definitely, Dr. Stan. And something you mentioned earlier, the secret, the big thing that's going around now, ultimately, if you're involved in any kind of mind science which involves using concentration to manipulate other people or the world, you're dealing with the dark side. Now, the secret ultimately goes back to a man named Charles Hanau, who had a system called the Master Key System in the early 1900s. And this is the first law of attraction group. Charles Hanau was an occultist. He was in various Rosicrucian and Freemasonic groups, and that's where he got the idea for this. Now, this watered-down secret-type practice, which, you know, spills into things like including business administration courses, where you use concentration to manipulate other people, ultimately that's diabolical. And what the telltale sign is, like there's a guy out there, Brian Tracy, who teaches a similar thing to The Secret. If they use some sort of vague metaphysical term in their teachings, like the oversoul or higher self, they're usually diabolical, ultimately.
I was just down at Costco a couple of days ago. They had a big pile, of course, of Rhonda Byrne's book, The Secret. I think they were about $15.95 for this little tiny book. Boy, she must be making a lot of money. But, of course, this is being pushed all across America. The Secret, of course, will introduce you to Luciferian forces. And if you get involved in it, why, of course, I don't believe that God is going to be there to rescue you. You have to understand, you avoid this at all, under all circumstances. There is a force out there you can tap into, and you don't want to tap into it, ladies and gentlemen. Believe me, you don't want to. Our guest this evening, WilliamHKennedy.com. Go to his website. Fascinating material. Well, William, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. Why don't you go right ahead?
Well, what I tell people, Dr. Stan, again, go to WilliamHKennedy.com and just pick any area of occult history you'd like to take a look at and educate yourself, because the more, your biggest defense against these people is hard facts and information, and I've compiled it in a clear and easy manner that everyone can learn about these subjects. And I just strongly encourage, information is your greatest weapon, and that's what these evil Luciferians who run our planet don't want people to have.
Amen to that. And I think it's so important that people understand this is not imaginary, it's real. But it's not simply in the religious realm. It permeates every aspect of our society. It permeates our banking and our financial institutions, and they are manipulating us into a situation where they're going to destroy the currency of our nation, impoverish our people. It goes into the highest echelons of our government. Of course, they're going to plunge us into war after war after war. They're going to begin creating great plagues throughout the world. They're going to create famines, and you're beginning to see the first signs of that at the present time. And they keep talking to us about, oh, the danger of epidemics and how we're going to have to suspend all freedom when those epidemics occur. They know exactly what they're doing. Your job is, of course, to understand and help us to get the information out. William, how can we reach more people?
Well, as I say, if everyone out there would just send an email to 3 of their friends and ask them to do the same and just put a link to WilliamHKennedy.com, that would be a big help. Every one more person is of great value, even one more person, because that's one less person these people will have control over.
And, of course, we think, of course, your book, Satanic Crimes, and our 4-tape set, Satanic Crimes, which has some interviews with you, is a wonderful source of information. We hope people will want to get this. We hope people will come to understand that the battle is not political. It is not ideological. It is not cultural. It is a spiritual battle that is being fought on a political, an ideological, and a cultural battlefield, financial battlefield, educational battlefield, but it is a spiritual battle. And of course, we need to get the churches to understand that and start getting this out. We need to reach the ministers, because they are the natural leaders of our society, or at least they should be. William, thank you so very much for being with us. We'll look forward to having you back again real soon, and really looking forward to seeing the final version of your DVD on Lucifer's Lodge.
Very good. Thank you, Dr. Stan.
And you better get to sleep. It's late. Good night, God
bless. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we hope you enjoyed our program. Certainly this is not a nice subject. But it is seminal to understand what's going on today. And certainly, let me mention, book written by William H. Kennedy called Satanic Crimes. And, of course, we have a four-tape set by the same title, four-tape or four-CD set. You need to understand about the Bilderbergers. Of course, we have other books on the Bilderbergers. Two other books. One is The Bilderbergers by Daniel Estulin. The other is Bilderberger Diary. And then, of course, we have a DVD on the subject. Information is there. You need to get it. If you don't understand that they're manipulating our weather, you need to get the book on weather modification, the four-tape set on weather modification, the DVD on weather modification. We've got a great DVD. It goes into satanic art in the Catholic Church. And, of course, it's called Rape of the Soul. It's put together by a fundamentalist, a Catholic. We have, of course, a four-tape set called The Secret Behind the Secret. The Secret Behind the Secret, which, of course, goes into the background of Rhonda Byrne and what she is trying to accomplish. And, of course, her book, her DVD sold, well, I think the book was up around 7 million copies. The DVD, 3 or 4 or 5, I don't know how many million copies of that out there, leading people to eternal damnation. And then, of course, we have the four-tape set on the supernatural. It's a four-tape set. It features Johanna Michelson. We have a book Johanna wrote called The Beautiful Side of Evil. Johanna was a medium. She was involved, of course, in psychic healing. She saw hundreds of people with incurable diseases cured, and she thought that it must be of God. I mean, how could anything wonderful be taking place and not be of God, until she found out, going back later, and, of course, interviewing the people, they were all demonically possessed. Understand, this is not imaginary, it's real. You want to get the book, The Beautiful Side of Evil, and the four-tape set on the supernatural. You want to get the book by Malachi Martin, and the four-tape set by Malachi Martin. The book is Hostage to the Devil. The four-tape set, it's primarily aimed at Catholics, but anybody can listen to it. Fascinating, the wisdom of Malachi Martin. And then, of course, you certainly would want to get the DVDs on They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. This is one of the finest things we have. It's very professionally done by our good friend Joe Schimmel, and of course, it goes into the background of how so many of the most prominent of our musicians who have made hundreds of millions of dollars have made a pact with the devil. Of course, it is Lucifer that's given them the power and the wealth, and so many of them have died very young. Then, of course, we hope that many of you want to get by. Talk on the Forbidden Secret. It's a DVD, and it comes with a syllabus. Why is it important? Because there really is a secret. If you watch Rhonda Byrne's DVD, she very dramatically points out that there is a secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years from Hermes and the emerald tablets that he inscribed the secret on. And she's absolutely right. There is this secret. It's been passed down from generation to generation, and no one would ever reveal this publicly until recently. That's why I know we're living in very important times. Let me suggest another DVD. It's called The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, Riddles in Stone. The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, where you'll hear a high-ranking mason saying, we never would, of course, been allowed to reveal this secret, would have been afraid to reveal these secrets in the past. But now they're no longer afraid to reveal them, which suggests to me we're moving into the final stages of this age-old battle between good and evil. You want to get our four-tape set? Our DVD on the planned police state and the syllabus that goes with that. That's the DVD on the planned police state and the DVD that goes with it. You need to get this information. You need to help us get the truth out. Our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.